Amateur Radio Newsline report number 1804 with a release date of March 9, 2012 to follow in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. The following is a QST. The Dayton Hamvention announces its 2012 award winners. The sun erupts with a massive CME hurled toward Earth. Brazil bans de-expedition operations from St. Peter and St. Paul. New rules now in effect for U.S. hams on 60 meters and a new movie about going into space from Richard Garriott, W5KWQ. All this and more on Amateur Radio Newsline, report number 1804. It comes your way right now.
From around the world, this is Newsline, Amateur Radio's first independent, on-the-air news and bulletin service. Now, reporting, here is Don Wilbanks, AE5DW.
It's honors time in amateur radio. This is the Dayton Amateur Radio Association announces the names of this year's Hamvention Award winners. Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF, is in the newsroom with more. Bill.
This year's Dayton Hamvention Awards Committee has gone worldwide in choosing who would receive the Hamvention's 2012 honors. Named as Radio Amateur of the Year is Mr. S. Suri, VU2MY of Hyderabad, India. Mr. Suri can best be described as the Hiram Percy Maxim of that nation. Among his numerous achievements, VU2MY was instrumental in establishing the art and science of amateur radio in India, as well as leading the effort to establish the world-acclaimed National Institute of Amateur Radio. Staying with his avocation, Mr. Suri has led search, rescue, and recovery efforts in many natural emergencies and events throughout India and elsewhere. Technical Achievement Award recipient Joel Hallis, W1ZR of Westport, Connecticut, is likely best known for his monthly QST column titled The Doctor Is In. This ongoing series is designed to answer many of the basic and not so basic technical questions of ham radio that readers may have on their minds. Most important, W1ZR responds to these questions in a very easy-to-read format that might best be cited as having a unique appeal, especially to newcomers in the hobby. In addition to his writing for QST, W1ZR is the author of several well-read books. These include such titles as Basic Radio, Basic Antennas, The ARL Guide to Antenna Tuners, and Understanding and Using Your Antenna Analyzer. He has also garnered many technical awards and remains one of the top authors in the field of amateur radio. This year's Special Achievement Award recipient is Steve Betza, WZ2V, of Endicott, New York. According to the awards committee, Betza enjoys teaching students by using live experiments and missions. Through a project called Blue Horizons, WZ2V has already licensed 38 new hams, set the world record for the highest amateur balloon at 125,000 feet, and demonstrated many technical feats relating to that record-setting flight. He also has contributed in a major way to college and high school education programs dealing with electronic engineering. Last but by no means least, the annual Club of the Year award goes to the Deutsche Amateur Radio Club. Better known by its initials, DARC, the group has organized Germany into one unified national radio society that can easily be compared to the ARL here in the United States. The DARC provides educational and technical support for radio amateurs and shortwave listeners. Prior to formal regulations in Germany, DARC provided guidance in terms of frequency and power management. Today, in addition to all of its other responsibilities, the DARC plays a major role in training and licensing of new radio amateurs across Germany and is well respected throughout the European Union. With our sincere congratulations to all of this year's Hamvention Award winners, I'm Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF. I'm in the newsroom in Los Angeles. Don?
The winners will receive their honors at the 2012 Dayton Hamvention. It's scheduled for May 18th to the 20th at the Hera Arena in the Dayton suburb of Trotwood, Ohio. Amateur Radio Newsline plans to be there to bring you all of the sounds of this year's Dayton Hamvention event. The largest solar flare in 5 years began racing toward Earth Wednesday, March 7th, threatening to unleash a torrent of charged particles that could disrupt communications worldwide. As this report is being prepared, the government's Space Weather Prediction Center has issued a warning that the effects of the coronal mass ejection, or CME, were expected to begin around 7 a.m. Eastern Time, Thursday, March 8th. Forecasters say the flare was growing as it sped outward from the sun. Joseph Kunches is a scientist for the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. He says that this particular solar storm was likely to last through Friday morning, March 9th, but warned that the region of the sun that erupted can still send more CMEs our way. Kunches noted that another set of active sunspots is readily visible on the solar disk and that these could also erupt to send more CMEs our way. This latest solar storm comes on the heels of an earlier and weaker solar eruption that happened Sunday, March 4th. For updates on this and other solar flare-ups, please keep an eye on www.spaceweather.com. The Southgate News reports that radio amateurs are now prohibited from operating de-expeditions from the Brazilian archipelago of St. Peter and St. Paul, also known as PY0S. This is a remote group of islands near the equator whose maximum elevation is only about 18 meters above sea level. It's also the nearest point of Brazil to Africa, lying about 1,820 kilometers from Guinea-Bissau. St. Peter and St. Paul was rated number 16 in the 2011 DXCC list of most wanted entities. In a report credited to PS8RF and the Brazilian Amateur Radio League, some DX groups in Brazil have shown their displeasure with this government ban on postings to various social websites. PS8RF told Southgate that there's already a major mobilization by the Brazilian ham community aimed at urging the nation's senators and federal representatives to reverse the decision on the ban. PS8RF notes that the biggest concern among Brazilian hams is that the decision could open unheard restrictions to other entities in Brazil, as in other parts of the world, where there is no amateur radio activity. More on this breaking news item is online at www.terracinadxgroup.com. Effective Monday, March 5th, United States radio amateurs were granted new operating privileges on the 60-meter band. In addition to an increase in effective radiated power from 50 to 100 watts, hams can now transmit CW and PSK31. More information on what modes can be used on what frequencies is online at the ARRL website. The quick link to it is tinyurl.com/60-meters-now. Ottawa, Canada's proposed rules for where private radio operators can put their antennas need another look. This according to the City Council's Rural Affairs Committee, which met 2 days after the city's planning committee reached a similar decision. Amateur Radio Newsline's Don Carlson, KQ6 FM, reports.
According to the online Ottawa Citizen, the regulations are aimed at restricting big and intrusive antenna installations while staying out of the way of small ones. But Ottawa area hams have warned city councilors that they do not agree with the way that they are written. Under the rules, antennas on residential properties would be exempt from public consultations as long as they are under 15 meters in height and at the back of a house. Radio amateurs countered that this type of regulation would leave little room for a working antenna above many trees and roof lines. Also, that it unduly restricts unobtrusive antennas that would be less visible in front yards than telephone wires, and it doesn't distinguish between an urban house and a rural one, where neighbors might be much too far away to care which yard has an antenna in it. Like the Planning Committee, the Rural Affairs Committee approved the rules their staff had made up, but nevertheless asked for tweaks and improvements to be made before the issue heads to the City Council for a final vote on March 28th. The Canadian province of Ottawa is home to about 1,400 amateur radio operators. City Council members have already been told that ham radio operators are a vital resource during rare disasters like extended power failures. Amateur radio enthusiasts were instrumental in setting up communications during the 1998 ice storm, particularly on the hard-hit south shore of Montreal. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Don Carlson, KQ6 FM in Reno.
According to the March 1st story, the city of Ottawa cannot actually control the placement of private or commercial antennas. That's the purview of the Canadian Federal Telecommunications Regulator, Industry Canada. However, Industry Canada does give municipalities a chance to comment when it's making decisions so that citizens can express what a city thinks is right for them. Now, the Ottawa City Council must convince Industry Canada to adopt them. From the United States of America, we are the Amateur Radio Newsline, heard on bulletin stations around the world, including the WA4TEN repeater, serving the city of Knoxville, Tennessee. Ham radio operators were activated after a rash of tornadoes hit in several states. We have more in this report.
trained ham radio communicators are needed in Clark County, Indiana, this following tornadoes that devastated the area on March 2nd. In a posting to the Indiana Ham Remailer picked up on QRZ.com, Jeff Brady, N9WSV, who is the Assistant Emergency Coordinator for Clark County, Indiana, says that more operators are needed to assist in recovery efforts. Brady says that they could use the additional operators to man various posts, even if it's only for a few hours a day. But don't just show up on site. Rather, if you can assist, please contact N9WSV by phone to area code 502-777-7304 or by email to n9wsv@arrl.net. If you're in the area, Jeff Brady says he's monitoring the 146.94 repeater, which requires a 67 Hz subaudible access tone. N9WSV adds that the local team of ham radio operators have put in many hours, and any relief that they get would truly be appreciated. Don?
More on the story in future Amateur Radio Newsline reports. The 44th running of the Boston, Massachusetts area Project Bread Walk for Hunger takes place Sunday, May 6th. Communications planners say they need licensed radio amateurs to provide communication support for the Project Bread staff and volunteers along the 20-mile walk. If you're interested in helping out this year, please take your web browser to www.mmra.org/WFH to log in and fill out the sign-up form. Questions go to WFH12@mmra.org. There could be some movement on the stalled FCC nominee front, but not very much. Amateur Radio Newsline Cheryl Lassick, K9BIK, reports. Cheryl.
According to a spokesperson for Senator Charles Grassley, his staffers met with those of Commerce Committee Chairman Senator Jay Rockefeller on Monday, February 27th, to discuss the senator's hold on two pending FCC commissioner nominations. These are Jessica Rosenworcel and Najee Tapai. The Grassley spokesperson called the meeting a development rather than progress. She added that she would not further characterize the meeting beyond saying it was about the nominations, Senator Grassley's hold threat, and a possible resolution. The Grassley warning stems from his request for documents related to the FCC's light squared waiver. These are documents that the FCC has refused to provide based on the agency's claim that Senator Grassley is not the chair of a relevant committee. That decision by the FCC to effuse the request has sparked a confrontation between the senator and the regulatory agency. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Cheryl Lassick, K9VIK, in Zion, Illinois.
The FCC has been without a full complement of commissioners since last spring when it was reduced to four by the exit of Meredith Atwell Baker. It's been at three since the retirement of Michael Copps at the end of last year. The FCC has affirmed a reduced fine of $450 issued to a Florida CB radio operator based only on his proven inability to pay a much higher $10,000 notice of apparent liability to monetary forfeiture. In ordering Michael W. Perry of Cross City to pay the reduced amount, the commission turned away his claim that he was not using a non-certified transmitter or an external power amplifier on the 11-meter band. In its order, the FCC indicated that there was ample physical evidence in this case and that the $10,000 fine was being reduced solely based on Perry proving that the fine would be a financial hardship on him. However, it also cautioned Perry that a party's inability to pay is only one factor in its forfeiture calculation analysis. The FCC stated that it has previously rejected inability to pay claims in cases of repeated or otherwise egregious violations. Therefore, future violations of this kind may result in significantly higher forfeitures that may not be reduced due to Perry's financial circumstances. Perry was given the customary 30 days from the date that the forfeiture order was affirmed to pay the $450. If he fails to do so, the matter could be turned over to the Department of Justice for collection. The FCC issued a notice of apparent liability to Taylor Broadcasting, which owns WJTB AM in Elyra, Ohio, this for allegedly failing to maintain management and staff presence at its main studio. In issuing the proposed $10,000 fine, the FCC said that its agents visited WJTB to inspect it in March of 2010, but found the main studio locked and apparently empty. According to the FCC, a person who identified herself as Ms. Taylor drove up and told them that they would have to talk to a Mr. Taylor. She gave the agents a phone number, but even armed with that contact information, the agents were unable to reach him or gain access to the studio. Later, after the FCC wrote a letter of inquiry, the company replied that its personnel do not work specific days and times, but rather are scheduled as needed. It also said that the agent should have pushed the entry buzzer, but when FCC agents returned in August, they again found the door locked, with no one answering knocks and no entry buzzer button to press. In issuing the proposed fine, the FCC said that Taylor Broadcasting's claim that station personnel are scheduled as needed has not resulted in a meaningful management and staff presence at its main studio. The base fine for such cases is $7,000, but the commission set the penalty at $10,000, saying Taylor's continued failure to comply with the commission's main studio requirements, even after being advised of this, demonstrates a deliberate disregard for the rules. Taylor Broadcasting was given the customary 30 days from the date of the notice of apparent liability was issued to pay it or to file an appeal. Dual station WTVO and WQRF in Rockford, Illinois was forced off the air on Friday, March 2nd, and staff evacuated from the building. This as heavy snow and low-altitude winds caused guy wires on the station's 700-foot-tall tower to whip around wildly. The station's chief engineer is Mike Reel. In a media interview, he said that in all the years that he's been at WTVO and WQRF, that he has never seen the tower guy system reacting in that way. He noted that the swaying guy wires had the ability to actually start shaking the tower down or cause damage to it, which is what he wanted to check on. Because of this, the station stayed off the air as crews examined the tower over the weekend. In addition to the evacuation at WTVO and WQRF, 12 homes near the tower were evacuated Friday night. After the inspection was completed, WTVO, WQRF resumed broadcasting Sunday night, March 4th. In case you missed the live web tour on February 12th of ARRL headquarters flagship station W1AW, you can now watch the 18-minute video on the ARRL website. In the show, W1AW station manager Joe Garcia, NJ1Q, led Jeff Fox, K1GF, on a tour of the famed station. Al Petrunti, KA1TCH of the New Day Group, recorded it for future broadcasting. You can view that video tour at ARRL.org/W1AW. It's there on the bottom of the page. The 2012 Martlesham Microwave Roundtable takes place April 28th and the 29th. This year's venue is the BT Adastral Park, Martlesham Heath in the United Kingdom near the city of Suffolk. Speakers scheduled so far include J.R. Miller, G3RUH, Andy Talbot, G4JNT, B.R. Coleman, G4NNS, and a number of other well-known UK microwave experimenters. The United States will be represented by well-known author Kent Britton, WA5VJB, of Grand Prairie, Texas. This promises to be one of the best Martlesham microwave roundtables in history. More information is online at mmrt.homedns.org. Some names in the news. First, Scott Carter, VE3CGN, who has been appointed as the new Section Emergency Coordinator for ARES in Ontario, Canada. According to Radio Amateurs of Canada, Carter was the former District Emergency Coordinator for the Tecumseh District and holds many certifications in emergency management. He's also very active with the Salvation Army Team Emergency Radio Network. His appointment was effective March 1st. And next, we travel back in time to 1983. That's when then-NASA astronaut and ham operator Owen Gary at W5LFL made the first manned amateur radio transmission from space. His pioneering effort from flight STS-9 paved the way for today's International Space Station ARIS program. Several decades later, Owen's son Richard, W5KWQ, would fly to the ISS and use the same method to talk to his dad and many others here on planet Earth. Now these historic moments have been captured in the exciting new documentary titled Man on a Mission, the film that reveals Richard Garriott's quest to become the first second-generation American in space. In a note to Amateur Radio Newsline via First Run Features, both W5LFL and W5KWQ asked that hams spread the word about this documentary to their club members and associates in the amateur radio community. Currently, Man on a Mission is available nationwide via video on demand. A DVD release is planned for May 2012. More about the documentary is online at firstrunfeatures.com/manonamission. The film's trailer can be seen at tinyurl.com/garriott-film. This is Ham Radio News for today's Radio Amateur from the United States of America. We are the Amateur Radio Newsline with links to the world from our only official website at www.arnewsline.org and being relayed by the volunteer services of the following Radio Amateur. United Kingdom notices a variation to amateur radio licenses for special research permits to operate in the band 501 to 504 kHz have been extended to December 31st, 2012. This as telecommunications regulator Ofcom has begun discussions with the Radio Society of Great Britain about the timetable for implementing the new secondary allocation to the amateur service, 472 to 479 kHz, that was recently approved at WRC 12. The agreed-upon availability date for this band to begin to become available for administrations worldwide to begin proceedings to open to their ham radio communities is effective as of January 1st, 2013. A United Kingdom notice of variation is the equivalent to an FCC-issued Special Temporary Authority, or STA, grant here in the USA. The Hamsat VO-52 amateur radio satellite that suddenly ceased operating last month could return to the air. According to VU2WMY, the satellite is in what he calls excellent health following recovery efforts and is currently under observation by ground controllers in India. By way of background, on February 28th, all transmissions from Hamsat VO-52 ceased. Since then, neither its beacon nor its 435 to 145 megahertz linear transponder has been heard by stations on the air. However, it now looks as if the bird is back to life, but there is one caveat. VU2WMY notes that Hamsat VO-52 is actually the property of the government of India. Therefore, unlike other amateur radio satellites that are owned, operated, and maintained by non-governmental agencies, detailed information on Hamsat VO-52 cannot be shared with anyone in accordance with the prevailing governmental regulations. However, VU2WMY adds that a decision about switching its transponder back on is pending clearance. VU2WMY adds that this is the first ever interruption of the services of the bird since Hamsat VO-52 was commissioned May 5th of 2005. The BBC reports that astronaut Chris Hadfield, VA3OOG, who also holds the U.S. call KC5RNJ, will be the first Canadian to command the International Space Station. According to the news report, Hadfield will begin his journey when he launches to the ISS on board a Russian Soyuz lift vehicle near the end of the year. For his first 3 months on orbit, the 52-year-old ham radio operator will serve as a flight engineer in the Expedition 34 crew. Then in March of 2013, he'll assume command of Expedition 35 for 3 months before returning to Earth. This will not be Hadfield's first trip into space. On past missions to orbit, he became the first Canadian to undertake a spacewalk and was the first and only Canadian to board the Russian Mir space station. VA3OOG was also the first Canadian to operate his country's major contribution to the space shuttle program, that being its famed robotic arm that was used in numerous space experiments, on-orbit repairs, and to help build the ISS. You can read more about Chris Hadfield, VA3OOG, and his upcoming trip to the ISS online at tinyurl.com/VA3OOG-on-orbit. A ceremony to mark the completion of the world's tallest freestanding broadcasting tower was held in Tokyo Friday, March 2nd. Construction on the Tokyo Sky Tree Tower began in 2008. It was completed a few days prior to its dedication ceremony. The Sky Tree stands 2,080 feet tall and is claimed to be the tallest structure of its type ever built. It will eventually be the home of most broadcasting and two-way radio operations in that city. Videos of the new tower and the dedication ceremony is online at tinyurl.com/tall-tokyo-tower. And before you ask if it will also be the home of any sort of ham radio relay operation, we can only say that your guess is as good as ours. All India Radio has outlined its digitization plan, this during the 18th Annual Broadcast Engineering Society of India event. According to All India Radio Director General, a pair of 1-megawatt transmitters at Rajkot and Kolkata are likely to be operational by the end of March, and an additional 72 digital Radio Mundial transmitters would be commissioned between June of this year and March 2013. The ongoing rollout by All India Radio has gained the interest of receiver manufacturers who were present at the event with their latest products. Digital Radio Mundial member companies Nautel, Digidia, Fraunhofer, Harris, and Thomson Broadcast attended the conference this year. Three special call signs will be activated from April 1st to the 30th from Belgium by the Flemish Radio Amateurs Association. This to honor those who perished 100 years ago in the sinking of the steamship Titanic. OO100MGY will be operated from the city of Antwerp. OR100MGY will take to the air from Nokheist, while OT100MGY will be on from Londerzeel. During the weekend of April 14th and 15th, all three stations will be active during a marathon session from 1200 Saturday until 1600 Sunday UTC. Each of these stations has a special and unique QSL card available so that three different styles can be acquired. NDX word that the AX/VK0TH operation from Macquarie Island, the December 2011 and January 2012 9U3 TMMD expedition to Burundi, and the 2011 600M operation from Somalia have all now been approved for DXCC credit. Also approved is the current T6BP operation from Afghanistan. If you had any of these operations rejected in a recent application, send a note to bmore@arrl.org to have your record updated. More notes that the AX/VK0TH operation is in addition to the VK0TH that has already been approved for DXCC recognition. On the air, look for the E-51M, the expedition that's going to North Cook Islands. It's now announced that it will also be active as E-51MCW from Rarotonga, South Cook Islands, between April 11th and the 14th. Operations will be on all bands, including 60 meters, using CW, SSB, and the digital modes, QSL via DJ8NK Direct or via the Bureau. AG1LE will be active stroke KP2 from the Radio Reef Contest Station, KP2M, on St. Croix between April 4th to the 11th, QSL as directed on the air. Lastly, F8FGU will be active as CN2RN from a high Atlas Morocco between April 3rd and the 30th. His operations will be on the high frequency bands using CW and SSB, QSL via his home call sign, either via the Bureau or direct. And finally this week, a special honor has been bestowed on a broadcast journalist who is considered to be the driving force that put manned amateur radio operations into space. He was truly a broadcast pioneer and part of the Amateur Radio Newsline family as well. Mark Abramovich, NT3V, is here with the details. Mark.
Many Newsline listeners recognize the name Roy Neal, the space voice of NBC News for many years and a big contributor to Newsline. Well, what most may not know is the late Roy Neal, K6DUE, actually grew up here in Philadelphia and got his start in the broadcasting business right here. A few months back, the Broadcast Pioneers of Philadelphia inducted Roy Neal into their Broadcasters Hall of Fame. Jerry Wilkinson, chairman of the board of the Broadcast Pioneers of Philadelphia, says Roy Neal got his start in the early days of radio and TV in Philadelphia.
He was public affairs and news director at WIBG. Then he went over to WPTZ, Channel 3, which is now KYW-TV. It was owned by Philco, and for 4 or 5 years, he did television programs for them.
Wilkinson says Neal was bitten by the space bug early, and there was no doubt that's what he wanted to talk about and cover the most. And Wilkinson says he had the privilege over the years of keeping in touch with Neal, even after his retirement from the broadcast business.
When you talk to him on the phone, there was just story after story after story that he would tell you, and he was just really a remarkable gentleman.
Wilkinson says Roy Neal never forgot his roots.
He still loved Philadelphia. The first three chapters of his book all deal with Philadelphia, and he certainly never forgot Philadelphia.
Book, you say? Don't bother looking. Roy never finished that book, but sent several of his close friends, including Wilkinson, the first three chapters. You can read it at the Broadcast Pioneers website by going to the web address inserted in the text version of this story on our website, arnewsline.org. Finally, Wilkinson says while it took some time to get Roy into the Philadelphia Hall of Fame, it was an honor well deserved.
He's one of us. He's from Philadelphia. And we really believe that what he did in Philadelphia and then later on in his career, that he deserved to be honored.
For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Mark Abramovich, NT3V, in Philadelphia.
For us here at Amateur Radio Newsline, it's hard to believe that Roy has been gone some 9 years now. Seems like only yesterday when his signature sign-off would end one of these newscasts. But thanks to Allen Labs, AMSAT, the ARRL, the CGC Communicator, CQ Magazine, the FCC, the Ohio Penn DX Bulletin, Radio Netherlands, RAIN, the RSGB, the Southgate News, and Australia's WIA News, that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline. Our email address is newsline@arnewsline.org. More information is available at Amateur Radio Newsline's only official website located at www.arnewsline.org. You can also write to us or support us at Amateur Radio Newsline, 28197 Robin Avenue, Santa Clarita, California, 91350. And a reminder that the nominating period for the 2012 Amateur Radio Newsline Young Ham of the Year Award is now open. Full details and a downloadable nominating form are on our website at arnewsline.org/YHOTY. For now, with Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF, at the editor's desk, I'm Don Wilbanks, AE5DW, saying 73, and we thank you for listening. Amateur Radio Newsline is copyright 2012. All rights are reserved.